welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency romance review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey. So this is our first book of 2021.
Yay! It is our first book. It's the first book I've read in 2021, and it's the first book that I've read since September. I did get two little novellas in, actually, in an anthology, but I wasn't able to mark off the anthology as read on Goodreads because I only did two of the five.
Because you didn't read all of it.
I know. And I'm a stickler for that. But this was, this is my first book in 2021. How is 2021 treating you for reading? Let's stick just to reading.
Well, my first 3 days were really good. I read three books in 3 days.
That's a great start.
And then I haven't picked up a book since then. And it's now mid-month. So, you know, but it's okay because life got a little wild there for a minute.
I can feel that. It's just interesting because I have, you know, a 3-month-old now, and it's just a different thing. Like, I don't feel like I have the brain power for reading quite as much as I did before. She actually sleeps really well, but, like, I only have a couple of hours here and there throughout the day to, like, have downtime where, you know, when you don't have a tiny human requiring your sustenance, you have more. So I just need to get better about reading while nursing, because that's the perfect time to do it. But I've been scrolling so far.
That's fair. You know, sometimes we just need brain mush, which is what happened to me. So I was like really good. I hadn't read a lot. And then I read over Christmas and then into New Year's. I was like a reading machine.
I
was like
that.
The most books I'd read in like over a month. And then, like I said, life got kind of in the way. So,
well, I'm excited to kind of get back into reading. And also, you know, we're talking before this recording about some of the books we're going to have upcoming. And those definitely have me excited for what's to come for us in the podcast. But let's talk about the book that we're reading today.
Yes. So today we are talking about Between the Devil and Ian Eversy by Julie Ann Long, which is the 9th book in our Pennyroyal Green series. So we're bringing it back to the beginning, kind of.
Two more left. Only two more books.
Ooh, crazy. It's very exciting.
Yeah. What are we going to do after that? We'll have to figure that out.
I know. But we'll have to find another long series.
Well, I have one in mind, but we'll talk about it. It's so funny. Every time that I see this book name, I always want to say Between the Devil and Ian Eversy. Oh. I don't know why. It's just a weird little earworm of mine, but I know it's Eversy, but Ian Eversy, the vowels are hard for me for some reason. I have no idea.
Very good. Yes. Well, this is really good. We're excited to bring it back. Julie Ann Long has been a good supporter of this podcast. We love you.
We do.
Which is also fun because she has two books coming out in 2021. And the first one that's coming out in, I believe, April is I'm Only Wicked With You, which is the third book of the Palace of Rogues series.
Yes, I'm excited for that. And then she announced on Facebook, I think she said that her fourth book in that series is out in December. So two gifts. So great.
Excellent. All right. So let's get into some history, just because in this book, we talk a little bit about America versus Britain, because Tansy, who is our heroine, she was born in England, but then spent the majority of her life in America and is now just returning to England. And one thing that's a common factor in these Regency books is often the Napoleonic Wars. And in America, we only learn about the War of 1812. So I'm going to give a little backstory behind this. So the Napoleonic Wars took place between 1803 and 1815, with the War of 1812 obviously starting in 1812. So unsurprisingly, Napoleon Bonaparte was the central and defining figure of the Napoleonic Wars. They are typically considered to have commenced in 1803, by which time Napoleon had been first consul of the French Republic for 4 years. Napoleon's leadership brought stability and military confidence to France in the aftermath of the Revolution, and his combative leadership style undoubtedly shaped the conflicts that came to constitute the Napoleonic Wars. The escalating agitation that prompted Britain to declare war on France in 1803 was entirely justified. Napoleon was already planning an invasion of Britain, a campaign he intended to fund with the 68 million francs the United States had just paid France for the Louisiana Purchase. Inevitably, power struggles in Europe had an impact on the global stage. The War of 1812 is a good example. The simmering tensions that eventually sparked this conflict between the U.S. and Britain were, to a large extent, caused by Britain's ongoing war with France, a situation that began to seriously impact America's ability to trade with either France or Britain.
Super interesting. Yeah, I really don't know anything about the War of 1812 and the Napoleonic Wars. I'm certain that I learned about them in school, but then I just like hear about them in my Regency novels. So we should definitely keep picking out facts and learning things about the Napoleonic Wars because they happened during the Regency.
Yeah, big part of the Regency, you know, and that was part of the unfitness, you know, that caused the regent to want to take hold was because they were embroiled in these wars and the prince regent needed to take control from his ailing father.
Yes, who we got to see a little bit in Bridgerton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But also you learn about him as Mad King George if you study any American Revolutionary War hero stories.
Yep. We get to see him in Hamilton, too.
Such a good one.
So today our main tropes are the rake and the virgin. And then we've got Duke with a ward. That happens a lot. I can immediately think of the Essex sisters where the Duke gets four wards. And then, of course, we have insta attraction / dislike. You know, that spark of I really like you, but I don't like you at all, actually.
Yes. And our main characters are Miss Titania Tansy Danforth and Mr. Ian Eversey.
So, shall we get into our synopsis?
We shall. So, Titania Danforth, better known as Tansy, has had the worst year imaginable. Her brother was killed in the War of 1812, and now, a year later, her parents had died in a carriage accident. So after losing what was left of her family, Tansy has now been shipped to England to be the ward of her father's good friend, the Duke of Falconbridge.
Tansy is now staying in the family home of the Duchess of Falconbridge, whom we know as Genevieve Eversey. So far, the Duke is a little intimidating, the Duchess is very kind, and everyone is very nice, except they seem to be skipping over a certain member of their family.
Ian Eversey is going about his life, but he's in need of something more. He's restless and not the kind that he wants to tame with a wife like everyone suggests. Instead, he's decided to use all the money he saved and sail around the world until he runs out of money.
When he heads back to Pennyroyal Green, he learns of his family's guest and is immediately warned away from her by, well, everyone.
Ian is a bit miffed by this. Yes, he can see that Tansy Danforth is beautiful, but she clearly uses her beauty to manipulate men, and he's frankly just not that interested.
Yeah, he's not really the simpering virgin kind of type.
No, but Tansy, on the other hand, is immediately infatuated with Ian. She knows she's there to marry a man the Duke approves of in order to gain her inheritance. And she can see right away that Ian is not on the approved list, but yet she cannot help but wish to gain his attention.
Our first interaction is at a ball held at the Eversey house. Tansy has claimed she's a bit of a wallflower, but no one is fooled, especially Ian. At some point, Ian finds himself asking Tansy to dance, and it ends with a bit of an awkward moment. Quote, "Well," she said thoughtfully, "nicknames are usually shortened names, are they not? For instance, if the diminutive derived from the first syllable of the name Jonathan is Johnny, what would my nickname logically be given that my name is Titania?" "Well, I suppose one would call you Titsy." An infinitesimal moment of horror passed. He was halfway into the word before realizing what he was saying, and the momentum carried him all the way through it. He stared at her as if a mourning dove had just sunk fangs into his hand.
This was hilarious, but then, of course, Tansy beat herself after. She's like, "Titsy? Really? Really? That's what you came up with? Ugh." And as things progress, our interactions don't get any steamier. In fact, Tansy keeps making things awkward and then kicking herself while she's alone in her room. Ian, on the other hand, is worried that Tansy is going to ruin Olivia's chance at finally finding happiness since Lion Redmond's disappearance.
Yes, Lord Lansdowne, Olivia's suitor, has sort of turned a thoughtful eye towards Tansy. So our plot then takes an interesting turn at the annual marksmanship competition of Pennyroyal Green. Ian has agreed to judge the tournament, and the whole of Pennyroyal Green is there to observe the competition, including all the most prominent ladies. Quote, "A murder of crows, a pride of lions, a judgment of ladies," he amused himself by thinking. Still, he might need to revise it to a murder of ladies, given some of the expressions. Oh, I loved that one.
I did too. The first round of the competition is archery, where Simon Covington shoots his arrow into the crowd after being distracted by Seamus Duggan speaking to Tansy. She has all the men in town making eyes at her. And now his wild arrow ends up hitting Lord Henry in the ass, and the competition is paused while Ian helps extract said arrow.
The next round is less exciting since no one can seem to shoot an apple with a musket. Every man takes a turn and then takes another turn. Finally, after countless misses, Tansy asks if she can have a go. All the men happily agree, but Ian more reluctantly so. He shows her how to hold the musket in a classic stand behind her and steady her hold. Tansy fires, falling back into Ian. That was lovely for Tansy, but not as lovely as obliterating the apple and winning the marksmanship competition.
Everyone is so enthused at the events of the day that they take their celebration back to the Eversea house. Colin sees Ian looking over at Tansy with a very speculative look and asks what Ian thinks of their guest. Ian's opinion is not really the most accepted one in Pennyroyal Green, it turns out. I'm telling you, Colin, she's Beelzebub in a bonnet, Satan in satin, the devil in damask. Precisely, Ian agreed fervently, deliberately ignoring Colin's irony.
Colin thinks that Ian is just acting and even warns him to stay away from Tansy. Ian is getting really tired of everyone thinking he just ravishes women willy-nilly. And while the men are talking, Tansy takes a walk with a Sergeant Sutton, who claims he wants to talk to her about a piece of art in the house. He then uses his time to try to force himself on Tansy. Quote, "Oh, we can fight our desires all we wish, but nature always wins. Nature knows what's best, and why shouldn't we give it a little assistance? I feel that we should." "Our desires, Sergeant Sutton?" He stepped closer. She stepped back. "I feel you should have used a different preposition."
Sergeant Sutton is about to get rough when suddenly Ian swoops in and saves the day. Once he deals with Sutton, Ian turns his fierce, angry gaze onto Tansy. He accuses her of playing with fire, to which she asks, doesn't he do the same? It turns heated, and eventually Ian gets to that calm level of anger, and Tansy decides it's best to shush up and walk away. However, both are rattled by the event.
The next day, Ian is at the Pig and Thistle when Ned Hawthorne tells him that Polly is missing. They head out to look for her, only to find that Tansy has already found Polly and was on the way to get help. Ian and Tansy see Ned and Polly off, and the act of helping someone in need gets them to speak without tension or awkwardness. Ian asks if she misses America, which she resoundingly answers yes, and they talk a bit about adventure novels and how Ian plans to take a journey across the sea. The conversation then turns to Lilymont, Tansy's childhood home. Ian mentions it is for sale. In fact, the Duke and Duchess might be interested in purchasing it. Tansy smiles wistfully, saying she wonders if her name is still under the kitchen window where she once carved it.
As expected, this is when we get that juicy sexual tension moment. Ian and Tansy are all carefree until she trips and Ian catches her. Their eyes meet and then things start to sizzle. Finally, they have an earth-shattering kiss, which is looking very promising, until Ian abruptly stops. Please stop playing at things you don't fully understand, Tansy. It will be the undoing of you. It's so very, very easy to lose yourself this way. Is that why you do it? She asks softly, ironically, to lose yourself.
And again, they leave each other frustrated and in a huff. Ian tries to avoid Tansy, but of course, a couple of days later, he sees her leaning over her balcony rail late at night, because of course he's in the room next door. No one in the house has realized that the two of them have been in adjoining rooms for weeks, but hey, and he rushes over to help. Instead, she was looking for constellations, and Ian cannot help himself where she is concerned anymore. They are finding that they are very similar, each with their own reckless streak.
That streak takes us to encounter number one, which involves Tansy seeing shooting stars and Ian feeling very much the martyr. He tells her that this cannot happen again.
The next night, Ian awakens from one of his usual bad dreams to find Tansy in his room. She snuck in, but now she just wants to comfort him from his dream. He tells her about how he was injured in the war, and she tells him about her family and her dreams for the future. Hearing those dreams, Ian knows he cannot be the one to ruin her, as much as he would like to make love to her. She is meant for someone else. The Duke would never approve of him, so he sends her back to her room.
Morning arrives, and with it comes an heir to a dukedom, Lord Stanhope. While Lord Stanhope is everything Tansy initially set her sights on, except he could be handsomer, she cannot help but think about Ian in his presence. A couple nights later, Ian is in bed hoping that Tansy doesn't come, but also secretly hoping that she will. And he awakens in the middle of the night and finds the room empty. And is like, oh, good, she didn't come. Oh, but if only. And then he awakens later, and there she is, sitting at the end of the bed. He immediately pulls off her nightdress and gets to work as per his all-or-nothing ultimatum he gave her after their last encounter. And then we have encounter 2, 3, and 4.
Woo! So just when everything should be bliss, it's not. The Duke's heir is moving fast, and Tansy has now learned that Ian was the one who wrote to Lord Stanhope to introduce him to Tansy, and he is planning to sail away around the world in 2 weeks. She confronts him that night, and he gives her the honest truth. Quote, I will tell you a few things that I know to be true. I wanted you, Tansy. I want you now. I will want you until the day I die. I never promised or implied a thing other than that. You wanted me too. The Duke will never allow me to marry you. And I am leaving.
The evening of the grand ball arrives, and Tansy and Ian, who have been avoiding each other for the past 12 days, are now in the same room again. At the ball, the two have a moment when Tansy asks Ian not to sleep with the widow who's been making eyes at him. He tells her he won't, simply because she asked. He, though, cannot ask her to not marry the future Duke, especially since he's not willing to offer an alternative.
And after Ian realizes that Lord Stanhope just sees Tansy as a possession and not as a person, he kind of loses his shit in the middle of the ball. And then he storms off with a purpose that he did not have before.
The next morning, Ian steals Lord Stanhope's meeting with Falconbridge and lays all his cards on the table. The Duke and Ian bury the hatchet, and the Duke even gives Ian permission to marry Tansy. Now the fun part.
Genevieve then tells Tansy that they must go for a drive, and Tansy's all sad, but reluctantly she agrees and is surprised when they arrive at her childhood home of Lilymont. Genevieve tells Tansy she'll catch up with her in the garden and then drives away because Ian is there.
He's used his savings to purchase Lilymont and asks Tansy if she will marry him. Quote, and if you would do me the honor of being my wife, I will always love you better than anyone in the world until our children come, and then I will love all of you more than life. I will devote the rest of my days to doing my best to make you happy. You must marry me, unless, of course, you'd like to see me perish. Will you?
Oh, it's very fortunate that Tansy also loves him too, and they are married a very short time later.
And in one last scene in Pennyroyal Green, we see Olivia, on the day of their wedding, receive a proposal of her own. Lansdowne knows she may never love him the way he loves her, but he says he will do his best to make her happy. And well, Lyon isn't here anymore, but Lansdowne is. So she says yes.
Ooh, it's like a cliffhanger in a romance novel. Mm-hmm. What is this? Oh my goodness. And you'd think that the next book is Olivia's book, but
it's not.
It is not. We have two more books. We have one book that is not Olivia's book, and then we have Olivia's book. So anyhow, we can talk about that all we want. But first, shall we adjourn to the parlor?
We shall. So today we're taking a trip forward in time and westward to talk about The Rancher Meets His Match by Kate Pierce.
Yeah, and we have talked about this series before, but now Kate is back with the fourth installment.
And this time, the story takes place in our neck of the woods, aka California.
Yeah, so the synopsis is Caden Miller may be the family jokester, but he takes his work on their ranch very seriously, as he should. Ranch work is very important.
It is. There's a lot to do.
So much. And as a sought-after master carpenter to boot, he's busier than ever. Still, when he's asked to renovate the neighboring ranch, he's more than willing. And honestly, is there really anything sexier than a beautiful barn?
Oh, seriously. Oh, man.
Kelsey and I could talk about barns forever, but anyhow, let's get back to our synopsis. So the owner, Juan Garcia, is ailing, and Caden expects to find the property pretty run down. What he doesn't expect is to find his old nemesis, Juan's daughter, Julia, overseeing his work. Julia's not sure why Caden never liked her, but if working with him makes life easier for her father, so be it. Yet to her surprise, not only is Caden great with her father, he's great with her too. As the weeks pass, it becomes harder to ignore their simmering attraction. And when Julia's boss turns up with a sweet deal, both she and Caden will have to decide where their loyalties and their hearts lie.
Ooh.
I know, fun carpenter and ranch and like, ugh.
And I love a good home renovation story. Let's be real.
I love a good home renovation, so
I mean, yeah. Like that too, but like, you know, it's funny, like my go-tos, it's like I want romance, true crime, or home renovation.
I'm so there with you. So the whole series is called the Morgan Valley series, and it emphasizes family bonds, community roots, and pride in hard work. And of course, the series also promises plenty of swoons.
If you'd like to check out The Rancher Meets His Match, you can get it wherever books are sold, and we'll link to that in our show notes.
Yeah. And today, we have a listener recommendation as well. So listener Marie reached out to us on Facebook, and she is recommending Keeping the Castle by Patrice Kindle, and she says it's a Regency young adult novel with a gentle, plotting young lady. It's all banter and light fun, and the audiobook is very good. So really cool. I've read the synopsis, and it sounds really fun, and I think that's really cool. I definitely want to get into more audiobooks this year. Having a baby, I feel like that is a great way for me to read because I still listen to a lot of podcasts, so I just need to add in some audiobooks, and I think that's how I'll get some of my books read.
There you go, Zoe. Excellent. Well, I think those are two great options. I really like this Morgan Valley series.
Yes.
Can't help it. Love me a cowboy.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to get in touch with us, our email is romancepod@gmail.com, and you can send us book recommendations, thoughts about this episode or any other episode. And we're on social media at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets. That's Instagram and Twitter, and Facebook /TN Strumpets, and YouTube by searching our name. And our website is romancepod.com, and there you can always find our episodes, more info about us, and other resources, so take a look.
Okay, Zoe, so this was a fun, light novel, not one of our twisty-turny plots that we sometimes have with a nice Julianne Long novel. This one was pretty straightforward.
This one was definitely what we've talked about. I think we talked about this in our episode with Jeff and Will on their podcast about historical romance as one of the kind of interesting tropes and something Kat Sebastian likes to do, which is two people who just need to get out of their own way.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And if you didn't, by the way, little plug here, if you didn't check out our episode with Jeff and Will about historical romance, we were on the Big Gay Fiction podcast last week. So you can check out their feed for that episode.
Yes. And these really are people that are just in their own way. I mean, Ian kind of
in their own way.
Yeah. And Tansy's just trying to, like, she does everything basically out of the fact that she's lonely and she's trying to make the best of the new life. But the reality is that she's lost her whole family and she's with people she's never met before. And she's supposed to get married in order to have her inheritance. And she's in a completely different country to boot.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting and I thought thoughtful moments in the book about grief and about two people who have a shared understanding of grief being able to come together. And I thought that that was really, it was really beautiful at times. I had some issues with other parts of it and other parts of the characterizations. I just felt like both of them never quite lived up to their potential, which kind of made me less excited about the book. I didn't resonate with these characters quite as much. I resonated with their moments of grief and trauma when they were going through that together. But some of the other things about the story, I felt like it dragged a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you get a lot of kind of the best moments for me happened really in like the last quarter of the book. You know, that's where they, but it's because that's when they kind of start talking and realize they share a lot of commonalities. You know, they both have a bit of a devious, reckless streak, but they actually are thoughtful individuals, which sometimes, you know, Tansy likes to play up the fact that she's beautiful and it just like, you know, but it's a mask. And Ian takes a while to see behind the mask. He's just like, oh, look at her. She's just a vapid creature, you know, just trying to wrap men around her finger and not thinking about it. Versus Tansy's like, this is my shield. This is my armor. And for Ian, for so long, it was his armor too. Like he did reckless things like climb balcony into a Duke's betrothed window and try to seduce the you know, his fiance because he could.
Yeah.
Like, not because of any real reason, just because he could. And so when they finally broke it down, and I loved it, my biggest thing that I really enjoyed was that when they did finally start talking, Tansy, even when it got like, she was awkward at first, but then when it turned to real conversation, she was not afraid to basically throw Ian's words back at him.
Oh, absolutely. Once she kind of found her tongue, she was able to, or she untied her tongue, she was able to give it kind of as much as receive it. So I really liked that. I thought it was interesting because they didn't have more than a few sentences of conversation with each other until like more than 150 pages in.
Oh, yeah. No, they just had like weird, strained, awkward encounter, weird, strained, awkward encounter. And
Ian really was not into her. Like, no, truly not into her.
Truly not interested whatsoever.
Like, he was like, yes, she's beautiful. Who cares? There's plenty of beautiful women. Like, yeah, there's plenty of beautiful women. Every time they talked, she like turned into a blundering fool, blushing fool.
I know. They're like, I wonder if she's hard of hearing because her volume just seems to have zero control.
I know. So funny. And I mean, we've all been there when you're like embarrassed and blushing and, you know, you get nervous. I get that. But can we move on to our actual hero and heroine? Because I think, you know, so much of the story was really just their development, right?
Yeah.
I had a problem with Ian. He was a little too much like protesting and then like, oh, I want to like save, you know, she's a virgin, so none of that. And I don't know, I just kind of found him to be an ass. How did you feel about him?
It was a little bit like I couldn't really get a read on him because it was one of those things where he was like, I didn't think he was an ass. I just think that he was very much like, I just couldn't tell where he wanted to be because he was miffed at everyone thinking he was just this rake who had no moral or boundaries. But then when he did decide he liked Tansy and he wanted her, he kind of proved that he was that rake because he was literally like, okay, but if you show up in my room at night, guess what? Like, we're going to make love because that's just what's going to happen because I've reached the end of my self-control.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, cool. I mean, like at that point, it needed to happen fast because we were most of the way through the book. But it just was kind of, it seemed so out of character of what he was trying to relay to people because he didn't want to be this person that everyone thought he was because he knew that he wasn't that. But it was just like, but then he kind of proved that's who he was.
Yeah. To me, it felt like both of our main characters, like their arc was going somewhere, but just never quite reached its full potential. Like it wasn't bad, neither of them, but it just didn't quite reach its full potential. I kept thinking, so before I get into Tansy, what would you rate our hero, Ian?
I'll give him a 7.
Fair enough. I think you definitely liked him more than me. I would give him a 6. I just, I just wasn't into him. I just really felt like he had some moments where he was very holier than thou. And then when they finally did have their relationship together, I felt like he didn't really come full circle about how he felt, you know. I felt like he was still using Tansy a little bit, even though he was very clear about all those, you know, things that they couldn't get married and she was making a decision for herself, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I just felt like he still was in a position of power, a significant position of power over her. And mm-hmm. I don't know, the dynamic just didn't feel, I don't know, it just didn't feel right to me. So he gets a 6.
Okay. There were some cute moments that he did that I wasn't able to cover in the synopsis that I mm-hmm. just really liked about him. And I think that's why it bumped him up a little bit for me. Like he does this thing where he researches North American flowers because her mom loved flowers. And she talks about how she brought some seeds to try to plant her mom's favorite flowers in England. So she has a little piece of her. And then Ian goes and Tansy keeps getting all these giant bouquets of flowers from all the men in town. And then one day there's this little tiny bundle of flowers and it's just like every North American flower he can find in England, like all tied up with a ribbon. And it's like, sorry for being an ass. And she's like, and this is a big deal because Ian's whole thing is he never gives presents. So
because he's kind of an ass.
Because he's kind of an ass. What'd you said in the card?
Yes. Yeah.
And so no, Tansy.
He definitely comes around. I think it just – the story took a while to get there, and I felt like the transformation was a little quick, you know, his coming around. And I understand a lot of that was his shields and his barriers from, you know, PTSD from the war and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But
like you said, I think it was like – it kind of ended like at the peak – it kind of like ended at like the plateau, and you wanted to see it go up just a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it kind of went up and then plateaued and then you wanted it to go up and then it's just like, nope, that's where we're leaving it.
So Tansy I found slightly more relatable than Ian. I liked the blunderingness and the how that she could basically charm the whole world except Ian because she mm-hmm. actually really liked Ian. I liked that she – I didn't feel ever that she was maliciously trying to get people to love her the way Ian thought. I think it was legitimately Tansy liked to make people feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. And so she would – I think, though, I kept waiting for that to be more, but I realized just now what other book it was that was like that. It was Miles Redmond's book with Cynthia Brightly because Cynthia Brightly really would make other people feel good about themselves. And that's one thing I loved about her characterization. And I think Tansy was maybe
– she was doing it a bit more like for the attention. Like she didn't – like you said, she is never malicious about it. And in fact, there was even a moment where she like thinks of, like she's kind of getting to know the family and like realize it. You know, and she does this sweet thing where she kind of like takes all the cards off her bouquets and just like tells the footman, she's like, those are all for Olivia because she realized that Olivia feels like she's threatening. And she's like, I don't actually want to be threatening to Olivia. But she was kind of wrapped up in her, like she was just wrapped up in her own head a little bit and was just like, I need that attention and wasn't thinking about the repercussions to like the other people around her.
Yeah, definitely. But for me, I really did not connect that much with this book. So Tansy to me was a 6.5. I felt like she also needed a little bit more development. So that's where she's at for me. How about you?
7.
Fair enough.
Had no qualms with it. Like, I mean, like you said, I think there was some things missing. Like I wish the ending hadn't been quite so abrupt. I wish there mm-hmm. had been a bit more of like a slow letdown, like a slow down after like we kind of crescendoed. But overall, I thought it was kind of fun to read. And like, I didn't dislike any of the characters. Like, I liked the characters. There was no one I really disliked.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, one last thing just for a general thought, because it didn't really come up in the synopsis. It was too hard to put in. But there's these really cute moments where like the Duke is kind of like eyeing Ian because he was all worried about Ian. And he keeps seeing Ian do these like things. And he's like,
So cute, though. Yeah, I appreciated the Duke all of a sudden being like, the fatherly figure, you know, mm-hmm. and having to kind of go up against his nemesis, his former nemesis, Ian.
Yeah.
That was a really cool storyline. I did like that part about the plot.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a favorite quote from this one?
I do. So this is when they find each other in the same room again, but they didn't actually have an encounter. They just had like a sweet moment together after Ian had a bad dream and Tansy was in his room and comforted him. So he's saying, "Oh, yes, I have medals and the like," he said dryly. "I'm brave as brave can be," so they said. "I just wasn't fast enough to get back to her without getting myself skewered. And so I saved her child but watched her die. And I get to watch her die in my dreams on occasion, too." Tansy was quiet for a long moment, taking this in. "Well, as long as you have the medals," she said thoughtfully. He threw his head back and laughed and had to bite his lip to stifle it. And she laughed too. It was the perfect thing to say. "Well, you did your best, or it wasn't your fault. It didn't matter how true those things were. It didn't matter how you tried to rationalize it away. The dreams would come anyway."
That's a really nice one. I totally understand when you get to speak to someone who understands your grief very similarly, mm-hmm. and they can just say the right thing, you know, something like this that's funny, but knowing that they understand your grief, it's just so different. It's so different. Yeah. You know, so actually my favorite quotes have to do with grief too. I have two. So the first one is, when Ian kind of realizes that she knows what it's like to be sad and have grief, because it kind of dawns on him that she's lost everyone important to her. So this is, "She knew what it was to mourn too. And strangely, there was a sudden easing in him, as if someone had finally played a note that harmonized with the one he sounded every day." Like, mm-hmm. how beautiful is that, to think about grief that way?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one later that I just liked that's kind of similarly when he's having a realization. And it says, "He closed his eyes as a wave of something roared through him like a dam broken. It felt like a torrent of sunlight, and it hurt, and it felt glorious. He knew then that the punching sensation he'd felt in the vicinity of his heart last night was really the locked gates of it being kicked open."
That's a really good one. That one almost made my cut.
Yeah. My other favorites were the ones you included that were the hilarious ones. So
those were good ones.
The devil in Damask. Like, yeah. It's so good. Or Damask. I probably am putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable there. But
that's okay. We're Merkins.
Well, and speaking of happy things, how about our steaminess rating and our encounter counter?
Well, our steaminess rating is very interesting. It's hard because instead of tea for me, it almost was like a slow burn. And I don't mm-hmm. think tea has a slow burn.
Fair enough.
So that's hard. Yeah, because I didn't find it like particularly steamy at the front. But then like once the scenes kind of were happening, I was like, ooh, okay. So it kind of got there. Like, during scenes,
you have to percolate brew your tea for a long time. You know, maybe it's a tea that takes a long time to develop flavor.
Oh, there
really
you go.
Be
you have
nuanced.
To sit. You have to sit and watch it steep.
Yeah.
And then once it's there, it's delicious. Yeah.
And how many encounters did we have?
Four.
So many.
I know. And it came in like rapid succession. It was like I was reading it and I was like, are these separate or are these one? And I was like, well, technically there's page breaks and there's like a little dialogue in between. So technically they're each individual ones.
Fair enough. So now we're at our feminist recap. And this is where I think I, for whatever reason, felt a little disconnect with this book. I don't think this book is an offender, but I just felt like some of the power dynamics between the two of them were not as, like, obviously men are in a position of power, like in mm-hmm. the Regency. It's just like, that's just how it is. But there was something like, even though he was consistently getting her consent and like consistently like very clear about like, if we do something, we're going to do it. And that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. But there just still to me was something that was a disconnect in the way he would speak it and the language that Julianne Long used. I don't think she even at all. Like, obviously she wasn't trying to do that, but it just didn't connect with me and it fell a little flat, where usually, like, I feel like her things are super feminist. So I feel like this one was more neutral. And I'm going to read one quote that to me, like, just didn't quite get there for me, that made me feel a little meh about it. Mm-hmm. And it's when he first they're on the balcony and they're first fooling around together. And it says, he pressed her head into his chest just in time to muffle her scream. And he held her close and felt triumph as he felt her body shake like a rag over and over with what was likely her first ever release. And it was just like this. I don't know. Maybe I was in a bad mood or something, but it just to me felt like what was likely her first ever release, and he feels triumphant over it. And it's not that he shouldn't, but it just felt very through the male gaze in that moment, I guess.
Well,
and
I put it a bit the same way after that encounter, because, like, I said, Ian feels very much the martyr, because at one point he was like, there wasn't penetration, but he did take his, he did open his trousers up so he could have, mm-hmm. like, that friction, mm-hmm. like, you know, for his own. And, like, yes, he concentrated on, like, her orgasm instead of his. But then it's just like, oh, he left feeling the martyr because he didn't, like, put his cock in her. It's like, which is not how it was phrased, guys. But it kind of, like, that felt like that to me. I was just like, oh, he's the martyr because he kept it in his pants, mostly.
Yeah, so I felt like this one just fell in neutral territory for me, because I wouldn't recommend this book as something to, like, make someone feel super empowered about mm-hmm. feminism. Like, yeah. That's where I was at with it.
I would agree.
But I also didn't think that it was, like, the kind of thing that if you read it, like, you're going to, you know, pick out tons of parts like this and be like, oh, this isn't empowering for people to be reading. Because this little thing that I picked out isn't completely, like, you know, degrading. It's just, I walked away from reading that passage being like, eh, I'm really not into Ian.
Yeah. And that's okay. I mean, there were times where I wish, like, where they're like, oh, maybe you should come to this society meeting. And Tansy's like, nah.
Well, and I thought that there were some interesting character choices for Tansy, where she really was like a little bit more like, I like simple things and I don't, you know, I don't aspire to X, Y, Z, you know? And mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting character choice in a good way, because there are plenty of, you know, people in the world and we're all very different. And it's really cool to see yourself represented. And there's plenty of people like Tansy mm-hmm. who maybe are like, I just want to make people happy. And, you know, I don't want to belong to societies. And I like hearing about cool things and I want to fall in love. And I don't know. I think, like, great. You know, I want to see love stories about all types of people. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Doesn't all have to be like smash the patriarchy in 1812 women.
No.
but I still want to feel like, you know, she's emerging from her chrysalis, no matter what her transformation was at the end of the story. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally get it.
So that leads us pretty nicely into our final book rating. How would you rate this book?
A 7.
I'm so surprised. I'd rate it a 6.
There you go. So easy. Yeah, no, this was good. Like, I liked it. I didn't really have anything against it, but it didn't have that wow factor. But was it, like, a really great read that I read in a day? Yes. I literally picked mm-hmm. it up in the morning and finished it by the evening and went to bed. And actually, I think I finished another book in the morning, started this one in, like, the early afternoon and finished it in the evening. So, like, it was good to read and it was, like, playful. And there wasn't a point where I had to, like, put it down and be like, ugh, what am I reading? You know, it was just, it was good and light and fluffy. And there we go.
I agree on a lot of those things. I think the writing is really good. I think the characters are different than a lot of the characters we see. Like, their characterizations and their relationship is kind of a different love story than we often see. And I mm-hmm. liked that. I think that Julianne Long's writing is beautiful as always, and especially beautiful in her conversations on grief and humor with grief. I think that mm-hmm. we don't see it kind of put on the page. Like, I think that these characters fell in love over understanding each other's grief. Like, yes, that was
100%.
That's a really cool way of looking at a love story, because a lot of people have that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought she had some really beautiful, like, just the three quotes that we read about grief, there were way more than that within the book. And yet the book felt light and happy and uplifting. And to be mm-hmm. able to talk about grief through that lens, I think is fabulous. So in that respect, I liked it. I just didn't like super identify with Tansy and Ian. I just, so for me, it was a 6.
There you go.
But yeah, I think also when I first read this book, I felt about the same way about it. And I also was like, just get to Olivia already. And yeah, then we had another book without Olivia and Lion. And I definitely remember liking the next one more, but I wonder if I'll like it even more now that I'm not just desperate for Olivia's book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm very interested. I don't remember much about the next book. I know who it's about, but I don't remember much of anything about it. So I'm very interested to read it again.
Yeah, me too. But we are not reading the next Penny Royal Green next time.
No, we're not.
No. And I know, listeners, that we, you know, we promised Bridgerton episodes, but we said we weren't going to be just doing Bridgerton episodes because, oh my gosh, then this is just a Bridgerton podcast and that's not what we're only about. But we talked about it and we finally figured out what we're going to do with our Bridgerton episodes.
Yes. So we are going to have a bit of a Bridgerton extravaganza on this podcast.
Yes, because here's the deal. We have 8 Bridgerton episodes. We have fabulous guests joining us. And what are we going to do? Like, are we going to pepper those in and do them from now until December?
No.
Or are we going to do them all right now? We better do them all right now.
We're just going to do them all right now. And that's okay, guys.
But we don't want to do 2 months of Bridgerton. And I know we also said we're going to promise to do 2 episodes a month at least. Well, next month, we're going to do 8 episodes.
And so you're just going to have a month of Bridgerton. So you know what we're calling February? We're calling it Be My Bridgerton Month.
Bzzz. Yes, we're going to do a Valentine's extravaganza with the Bridgertons for the whole month of February, because Valentine's, Galentine's, all that stuff. Like, let's just celebrate it with the Bridgertons. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get through all of our awesome Bridgerton episodes and then get back to reading some books again. But we were like, now is the time. And we don't want to hold on to these episodes for months. So let's get them out. And you guys are going to hear them twice a week in February. We'll be having Tuesday and Thursday episodes. Let me just double check that's going to work based on February being a short month. So yes, that's going to work perfectly. You're going to get Tuesday and Thursday episodes in February, all month long. So get excited.
Yes. And let us know what you think using hashtag BBEE, my Bridgerton, Bumblebee.
Yeah, definitely check our social media channels. We're going to have some fun stuff, maybe some little Valentine's cards that you can use to send to your friends.
Mm-hmm. We're working on it, guys.
And really, I'm so excited for our guests that are going to be joining us. So let's talk about our first guest real quick. So our first guest is Corey Kelly, and she is a blogger who you might know by Corey's Corner on Instagram. And she's got a whole bunch of awesome diversity projects going on, but she is going to tell us all about those in her episode. So join us next week for our first episode on the Bridgerton Netflix series.
And may all your ever afters end happily.
Tea and Strumpets is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Becky Feldman here, and I am too stupid to live. And do you want to hear something crazy? I also host a comedy podcast called Too Stupid to Live. How did that happen? I have no idea. Anyway, on Too Stupid to Live, I am joined by some hilarious guests where we review romance novels $5 and under. And we have covered the gamut of romantic fiction, from historical romances to dinosaur erotica, which, you know what, now that I think about it, I think that's like also a historical romance. Anyway, each episode, we go on this engaging journey. I've had Sarah McLean, the fabulous author, talking about the power of romance, to Nick Weiger of the Doughboys podcast, reading a sexy excerpt in the voice of Elizabeth Holmes. That one still gives me very sexy nightmares, but I just can't get enough. So TSTL puts out 2 episodes a month, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts.